Welcome back to today's Intelligent Medicine Podcast. I'm your host, Dr. Ronald Hoffman, and the subject of today's clinical focus is sulforaphane, a remarkable anti-cancer nutrient, and it's a detoxifier. And so let's talk a little bit more about what's been happening since the early 1990s when it was recognized that sulforaphane may have chemoprotective effects against certain cancers. The research on cancer has proceeded apace. But of great interest is research that suggests that sulforaphane may have neuroprotective effects. In a paper in a journal called Oxidative Medicine and Cellular Longevity, sulforaphane is suggested to have potential protective effects against neurodegenerative diseases. So what they're saying here is there are a wide variety of acute and chronic neurodegenerative diseases, including stroke and traumatic brain injury, Alzheimer's disease, and Parkinson's. They all share common characteristics. There's oxidative stress, there's inflammation, there's damage to the nerves, there's misfolded proteins, which is gets in the way of the translation of DNA, and there are no drugs that can prevent the progression of these neurological disorders. So they're looking for a targeted therapy that can address that. And what they've discovered is that sulforaphane has the ability to activate what's called the NRF2 pathway. This is, we're getting into some deep weeds here. But NRF2 is a favorite subject of Dr. David Perlmutter. Dr. Perlmutter talks about slowing the progression of neurological disease. He's America's foremost integrative neurologist. And NRF2 may be a key to alleviating neurodegenerative conditions. They say here that, therefore, because of its ability to activate the NRF2 pathway, sulforaphane appears to be a promising compound with neuroprotective properties and an important role in preventing neurodegeneration. And so they summarize the research that suggests that sulforaphane may be a shield against damage to the brain. So they conclude in this article that studies have demonstrated the ability of sulforaphane to prevent various neurodegenerative processes that underlie stroke, traumatic brain injury, Alzheimer's disease, and Parkinson's disease. And sulforaphane presents many advantages, such as good pharmacokinetics. I mean, it stays around, it's absorbed, and safety after oral administration, as well as the potential to penetrate the blood-brain barrier. That's very important because sometimes you take anti-inflammatories and, yeah, they work for your elbows and knees, but they don't really get to the brain. So the one thing that I will say is that this article, which was done in 2013, relies mostly on test tube models and animal models and doesn't say much about long-term trials, which are as yet to be undertaken with people who take sulforaphane for these various conditions. So stay tuned. I think that these studies are likely to be underway. By contrast, there is a fascinating study that looks at actual folks. Folks with autism. Yeah, it's incredible. In the Proceedings of the National Academy of Sciences in 2014, by the way, Paul Talalay, the discoverer of the benefits of sulforaphane in cancer, is listed as a co-author. But, you know, he was 91 at the time, so I think he's sort of professor emeritus on this, an advisor. The lead authors are another team. Sulforaphane treatment of autism spectrum disorder. Whoa! That is amazing. They looked at a small group of individuals with moderate to severe autism spectrum disorder. And they received the phytochemical sulforaphane derived from broccoli sprout extracts, or placebo. They followed the effects on behavior of daily oral doses of sulforaphane for 18 weeks. And what they found was there was minimal change in those receiving placebo, whereas those receiving sulforaphane showed substantial declines, improvements of behavior in various ways that they rate the behavior of autistic individuals. A significantly greater number of participants receiving sulforaphane had improvement in social interaction, abnormal behavior, and verbal communication. And upon discontinuation, the scores went back to pre-treatment levels. So they say that dietary sulforaphane of recognized low toxicity was selected for its capacity to reverse abnormalities that have been associated with autism spectrum disorder, including oxidative stress, lower antioxidant capacity, depressed glutathione synthesis, reduced mitochondrial function, and oxidative phosphorylation, increased lipid peroxidation, and neuroinflammation. So that is pretty cool. And I see that a second trial is being, they're recruiting for a second trial as of last year, and the trial is not yet completed. So, whoa, what a leap from the test tube and animal research to actual human subjects with tangible benefits, double-digit benefits, in admittedly a small group of autistic patients. So let's get back to delivery systems when it comes to sulforaphane. As I said last in part one, the form in which you deliver sulforaphane is very important. And the best form is to eat sprouts. That's documented to deliver a lot of sulforaphane because the sprouts that are raw and living contain myrosinase, which is the enzyme responsible for taking glucoraphanin and converting it into sulforaphane. And when you try and, you know, dehydrate the sprouts or, you know, don't do it right, you're going to have a problem. But you'll also have let's say you're trying to treat autistic kids. What do you do? Say kid to a kid who's autistic, who's very finicky about food. We know these kids are very, very monochromatic in their dietary choices, if that's the word. They'll eat your broccoli, you know, junior. Well, no, that's not really going to work. Or here, you know, eat a whole bunch of these sprouts. Well, I don't know, maybe we can devise a way to make the sprouts more palatable. But what about a pill? And yeah, you might say, well, kid can't swallow pills, but you can open the pill and you can disguise the pill in applesauce. So I came across a second study, which has much more encouraging results. And the title of the study, it's actually a headline from Nutrient Ingredients, and it's based on a study from Johns Hopkins University School of Medicine. Gee, that sounds familiar. Johns Hopkins University School of Medicine. Isn't that the same place where in 1992 they discovered sulforaphane? Well, it seems that the same group where Paul Talalay, who's 93, is now retired, the group led by Dr. Jed Fahey says this is the first study in which we used a commercially available glucoraphanin-rich product made from broccoli seeds. Okay? So maybe that's the trick. Instead of using broccoli sprouts, use broccoli seeds. What they found in this study, they recruited 20 participants, and they found that the average conversion rates for the products in question compared favorably to broccoli sprout. So here's the statistic. The conversion was 12.8% for the broccoli sprout preparation, 11.2% for something called Oncoplex broccoli seed supplement preparation. Okay, so this is kind of cool, because there's actually a bioequivalence. And the volunteers had equivalent output of sulforaphane in their urine to that which they produced when given the glucoraphanin from broccoli sprouts. So, okay. Now, how does that work? Well, if you take this new product, Oncoplex, and you analyze it for myricinase, it doesn't have any myricinase. But apparently there's enough myricinase in your gastrointestinal tract to bioconvert the glucoraphanin into active sulforaphane. So this is the way that you're going to get some active sulforaphane from a dehydrated capsule. Now, admittedly, it's probably better to consume dietary raw cruciferous vegetables or very lightly braised cruciferous vegetables. And there are some ways you can amp up the production of sulforaphane from your cruciferous vegetables. You can be a little bit ingenious. I'll leave it to you to come up with recipes for this. But it turns out that daikon is a very nice source of myricinase, and so you could amp up the delivery of sulforaphane by consuming cabbage family vegetables with a tangy dressing or garnish made of freshly grated wasabi, daikon, or horseradish. And what I might suggest is daikon can be easily grated. You know, use a grater and maybe make a kale salad with some grated daikon on it. You know, there's now baby kale that's available, and that has glucosinolates or precursors of sulforaphane. And the myricinase in the daikon can help convert that. Or alternatively, you can maybe get some avocado mayonnaise. I don't really like the soy mayonnaise anymore, the canola oil mayonnaise, and add a little bit of wasabi or horseradish to taste and spice it up in some other ways, and use that as a dressing on, say, coleslaw or a salad with kale or arugula, and maybe throw in some watercress, which is also a pretty good source of the myricinase that helps convert the glucoraphanin into sulforaphane. So you have to kind of be ingenious with that. There's a caveat here, which is that the product Oncoplex, which, by the way, they have a very nice website that supports the use of this ingredient. The website is at truebrock.com. You can look at the research that underlies that. It's not bioequivalent to raw sprouts. It's bioequivalent to sprouts that have been encapsulated. So you still may want to hedge your bets and have the capsules in addition to some raw sources of, or lightly cooked sources of these cruciferous vegetables. Now, you may also say, well, okay, I'm having all these cruciferous vegetables. That's going to kill my thyroid, right? Well, studies indicate that that is not really the case. In a recent article that I wrote, you can find it on our website at drhoffman.com. It's entitled, "Can What You Eat Really Damage Your Thyroid?" Early this year, I wrote about goitrogens. Goitrogens include soy to some extent, but in particular cruciferous vegetables. And there have been some accounts of people really overdoing it. There was one account of an Asian woman who consumed an enormous amount of Chinese broccoli. I'm sorry, Chinese cabbage. 88-year-old Chinese woman who was found by her family to be lethargic. She was unable to walk or swallow for 3 days, and she was brought to the emergency room. And it was discovered that she had consumed an estimated 2 to 3 pounds of raw bok choy daily for several months in the belief that it would help control her diabetes. And tests revealed her to have almost no thyroid function at all. I think she had a TSH of like 300, which is just unheard of. High TSH means low thyroid. She recovered completely with administration of thyroid hormone, but illustrates the potential for lots and lots of raw Chinese cabbage to suppress the thyroid. But researchers have found that the consumption of typical servings of raw commercial broccoli, Chinese cabbage, bok choy, or broccoli rub deliver glucosinolates at a concentration far lower than those likely to impair thyroid function. There is a type of kale. It's the Russian or Siberian type of kale, not the other kinds, and I'm not sure how you distinguish when you buy kale. Brussels sprouts have the potential to suppress the thyroid, but you'd have to consume them raw in amounts greater than a kilo per day. That would be tough for several months, likely to damage your thyroid. So, you know, I have to say that I think the fear and paranoia about consuming cruciferous vegetables is overblown. So the net effect of all this is that I've switched my allegiance from Broccomax to Oncoplex by Zymogen. That's a product that you can now find at the drhoffman.com website. And I think that the final word awaits more clinical trials. But I note that in the clinical trials, particularly in the autism study, it seems that they didn't feed sprouts to these people. They fed them a sprout extract. And that suggests that there's some viability to the idea that you can take a pill to deliver sulforaphane. And, you know, with some little more clinical research, we can now demonstrate that pills work as well, although, you know, maybe with a little bit less activity than fresh, live, raw vegetables or lightly cooked vegetables. So there you have it. That's the sulforaphane story. Sulforaphane, a very valuable nutrient. And let's not forget a companion nutrient, which is found in cabbage family vegetables, which is DIM, diindolmethane, which converts to I3C, indole-3-carbinol, which may have anti-cancer properties through an entirely different mechanism. It appears to be a detoxifier, but it also appears to have an impact on hormone balance, thus exerting a protective effect against particularly hormonal cancers, prostate cancer in men, breast and ovarian and uterine in women, a good treatment for estrogen dominance. So there's also an article that I've written on that subject entitled Supplement of the Week, DIM, which I wrote earlier this year. So you can get discussion about another broccoli's beneficial compounds in my recent clinical focus on DIM, which I ask you to look up if you're interested, at drhoffman.com. Thanks very much for joining us. Check out Oncoplex, which is a new addition to our store. Those of you who've been faithfully taking Broccomax, look, it's not like you've been wasting your time. It delivers a certain amount of sulforaphane, but I've made a decision as you know, my repertoire of supplements is constantly being reevaluated, and I'm always looking at new studies. And my current research suggests that Oncoplex may be a preferable alternative. Thanks very much for joining us. I'm Dr. Ronald Hoffman, and this is the Intelligent Medicine Podcast.